All right, welcome to the first Graveshift Radio Quickie. I'm Ryan Lewis, and with me, as always, is John Rose, Bo Ransdell, and the newest member of Graveshift Radio, Duncan motherfucking McLeish. How you doing, fellas?
Hey, I'm here and always ready for a quickie.
Right on. So let's do this. Okay. We're going to play the trailer for Tales from the Dark Side, and we are going to be talking about Tales from the Dark Side because how we see it and how the major populace sees it, it is the true third chapter of Creepshow, and we are doing a Creepshow 1 and 2 retrospective, which will be dropping after this. So this is just a little bonus. So there you go.
A little appetizer, if you will.
There it is. A sous-sante of something.
And a moose bush, if you will.
Yeah, it's a nice little prelude.
What does this have to do with pubic hair?
And here's the trailer.
Stephen King, originator of Pet Cemetery. Arthur Conan Doyle, author of Sherlock Holmes. Michael McDowell, creator of Beetlejuice. George Romero, director of Night of the Living Dead. Now, these four masters of everlasting horror bring to the screen four tales of overwhelming terror.
I warned them, but they wouldn't listen.
Tales of diabolical fate.
You promised you'd never die!
Tales of ghastly revenge.
Grow, O light. Rise, O light. Come forth, O light. Open his eyes.
Tales of ruthless evil.
That cat has killed three people in this household.
I don't believe this.
Kill it. Bury it. And bring me its tail.
Tales from the Dark Side.
Well, that just about takes care of that, doesn't it?
Come, live the nightmare of your choice. Tales from the Dark Side. The movie.
All right, we're back. That was the trailer, and we are talking Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, starring Deborah Harry, Christian Slater, Julian Moore, Steve Buscemi, Ray Don Chong, David Johnson, Matthew Lawrence, William Hickey, and 50,000 other people because it's an anthology, and it was directed by John Harrison. All right, gentlemen. Since this is an anthology, I think the only way to do this is to talk segment by segment.
Do we do wraparound first, or do we do wraparound last? Because that's where we end up.
Well, we should establish the fact that where this film starts.
It starts in a beautiful little suburban neighborhood with a chick that looks like she's preparing dinner, and then we find out she's a psychotic motherfucker.
Right, I think they're trying to say she's a witch because she has, you know, a witch-type broom hanging up on the wall and such.
Yeah, definitely a witch, but, dude, if I ever find a house like that in the suburbs with a fucking dungeon right in the kitchen, totally buying it.
Well, she is Bondi's. It is possible.
Yeah, Debbie Harry is one of the most awesome ladies that has ever been.
Right.
Yes, agreed.
And she has this young boy inside, locked up in a cage, and she's fattening him up with cookies because she plans on eviscerating him and cooking him in the oven and feeding him to dinner guests. And in order to put it off a little bit from getting cut open and everything, he decides to read her stories from this Tales from the Dark Side. And these stories happen to be the segments.
Yeah, he kind of Scheherazades his way into surviving a little bit longer. I just wanted to be able to use Scheherazade as a verb.
First time it's ever been done, I'm pretty sure. Okay, the first story is Lot 249, which I'm just going to go on the record right now, I think is the weakest of all of them.
Yeah, but oddly enough, to me, it's one of the best mummy stories I think I've seen on film.
Yeah, I dig it. I dig it. So if that's how you feel about it, John, why don't you get us started?
Oh, I mean, we start right off, and I want to go to this fucking college. This is a fucking awesome college. It's got both Christian Slater and Steve Buscemi in it. Holy shit, dude.
And, Julianne Moore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. And I think this is a really good fucking mummy story. I mean, it has good gore. The kills are very nice. And Christian Slater's turn at the end is, I like that. I go with Christian Slater throughout all of this, but Steve Buscemi proving that he's an evil genius, that's just fucking great.
Yes, you're right. Young Jack Nicholson is wonderful in this film. Yeah, I like the whole fact that it has the setup where Buscemi's character is set up to look like he stole a piece of, you know, an artifact from a museum, which he didn't do. And it was actually Julianne Moore's character, and he knew it the whole time. Even if he's not saying it, he knows it. Yep. And I dig that whole setup. And the fact that it leads into, you know, finding a scroll that could bring a mummy to life to pick off your enemies. You know, something about that that is so fucking comic booky, which I imagine is the point. But at the same time, it makes me smile. Like I said, I find this to be like the weakest entry in the film, but it doesn't make it bad.
I think it's the middle in terms of quality. We'll get into the one that I like the least, but I agree with John. I think this is a fun mummy story. I don't think there are a lot of great mummy shorts or longs even out there. Talkies.
Well, you're not a Brendan Fraser fan, is that what's going on?
I think those movies are not really mummy movies. All not in the traditional sense. And I probably like them more than I ought to, but, you know, I still think this is, in terms of just being a horror story, which is where The Mummy began. Yeah, I think this is pretty good. I think the performances are fun. I think Christian Slater in particular looks like he's having a real good time being, you know, kind of a bastard, which yeah. May or may not be true to life. it's nice to see a young Julianne Moore. Being a redheaded minx, and
it really is nice to see her. I think she looks in this movie.
Yeah. I have a long-standing crush on Julianne Moore, even up to and including her role in Maps to the Stars. Yeah. I can still find plenty of great things about, you know, not just her performance, but she's just a beautiful lady. Yeah, so all that's real fun. It doesn't blow me away when I see it, but it's perfectly entertaining. There's nothing wrong here. You know, if you like mummy stuff, this is one of the better ones.
Right on.
I'm kind of a bore on this one. It sits in the middle for me. It feels very safe, and I tend to find that especially when I'm watching anthologies, if you only have a short period of time to put forward the story, I like the stories to be a bit more batty, you know, a bit more out there, something that goes a bit more for the jugular, just tries to do something different. This one is very paint by numbers, and that's no way disrespectful to the way it's performed. The acting's phenomenal, and it's a really good cast in this one. Probably one of the strongest casts out of the three stories in terms of where these actors have went since those roles, minus maybe Christian Slater, who kind of dropped off the map. But I think it's well done. I just think it's very, very safe. And when you hear the show that we've done, the Graveshift show, where we're talking about Creepshow and Creepshow 2, I think those entries had more room to experiment and try things that maybe sometimes didn't necessarily succeed. But at the same time, I kind of respect them because they went a wee bit batty. This one, it's all right. It's certainly, I mean, it builds up. It builds up as an opener. I tend to find anthologies, the first one needs to hit you strong. This one maybe doesn't do it the way I wanted it.
Right, see, you're in line with me. That's exactly how I feel about this one. But yeah, I do enjoy the ending. I enjoy the fact that he still has ultimate control, and apparently this scroll, he could bring any dead body back to life and sends Christian Slater's sister and dead boyfriend of the sister to get him at the end. It's fitting, and it's very EC Comics, which I think Creepshow 1 and 2 specifically are. Just scream EC Comics, but this holds to that, feeling, which I really dig.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things about this story that I did like. I mean, Duncan calls it safe, but I want to call it more of a throwback, and that's one of the things I really enjoy about it, was the classical feel of the story.
Right on. All right, next segment is The Cat from Hell. This fucking segment.
Now we're fucking talking.
That's what I'm talking about. This is what I'm looking for in an anthology horror series. This segment, and fucking to a almost lesser, but I can't really say that, the final segment, which we'll get into, which happens to be my favorite.
I think the reason this one is the best, I think we can all safely say that. I think that's the reason this one is the best and why it's so in keeping with the other two ones is George Romero's back, Stephen King's back. And you can tell straight away, this is a really interesting fucking story. I love the idea of this one. I love the scenario where someone would pay a hitman to kill a cat. I'm just like,
and you hire Buster Poindexter, for God's sake.
Right. Who is fucking awesome in this.
Yep.
Oh, by far. I mean, the entire cast of this one, including the cat, is great, but yeah, he stands out. Oh my God. This
I need fucking... you to kill the cat!
I love the fact for this segment, okay, you're hearing it. What is it? The Texoxin G or something? Okay, he creates this pill and apparently experimented on, 10,000 cats or something, which they all died to make this. So he thinks this cat is like a vengeful spirit that has come to exact vengeance upon him and anyone near him because of this creation of this drug. And I like the fact that as it's going on and he's explaining exactly what happened, there could be a back in your mind thought of, okay, this is an accident. Okay, the cat happened to just walk in front of somebody. I can't even count the amount of times my fucking cats have sent me down the stairs. It has happened. All right, and even with, he was driving around with somebody and the cat scratched him. Well, he wasn't there, so how do you know that even happened? This is him explaining what happened, but who knows? But then at the end, it turns into cat predator vision. Running around, and oh my God, the shit that this cat does to this man. Okay, let's not tiptoe around it. Climbing inside his mouth.
Yeah.
And going inside his body and hearing the sounds of lapping, of like it's eating his insides, to just fucking wait there for a while for the old man to come home, Mr. Hickey, to leap out and come at his face to end the segment. It's brilliant. I love this segment so fucking much.
Yeah, I mean, as a cat owner, and I take care of my pet pretty well, like, she is fed and clean and all that stuff, would not put it past her to crawl into my mouth and eat me from the inside. So, first of all, I can buy the premise. I don't think it's ridiculous, and I don't think the cat has to be possessed. But the fact that it is, or, in theory, is a cat spirit of some sort, I think is pretty awesome. Buster Poindexter kicks ass in this. William Hickey, I love hearing talk because it's like somebody rubbing sandpaper across glass.
Yeah.
But in kind of a wonderful way. Yeah, it's just a weird story, but it's kind of gruesome and inventive and over the top in a way that is a lot of fun to watch. Far and away, in my opinion, the best thing this movie has to offer.
Yeah, it really is. And it has so many, just touches of the men behind it. I mean, it hints at Creepshow so much because of Stephen King's writing and George Romero's interpretation of that. I mean, it's great. I mean, I know it, when the cat is clawing at the man's crotch, just going at his balls, it's funny as hell. Just this man going insane trying to kill a cat.
Yeah, like, yeah, I love it. I love that because for when you first hear the premise, like Ryan was saying, you kind of pass it. He's an old man. He's, you know, he's stuck in a wheelchair. He's clearly starting to lose his marbles a bit. And as the story progresses on, you're like, well, maybe this is just a bit of a coincidence. And then by then, you're like, oh no, this cat is Satan. This cat is Satan. Satan in a cat form. And I fucking love that. And like Ryan was saying, the iconic moment of this whole anthology here is that cat coming out of the guy's mouth. That's fucking genius. That's absolutely horrific. It's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, and I guess it pretty much is to establish that it really has to be a vengeful spirit because you have, you know, this dude is a hitman. He is trained. We've seen his, you know, suitcase filled with his tools of the trade, so he obviously knows what he's doing, and he's taking dead beads at this thing with a fucking silent, with a laser scope, and it shoots right through this fucking cat. So it's obviously supernatural. So, you know, once again, very, very EC comic, very fucking horror anthology, and very fucking badass.
I mean, what the guy didn't know, what the hitman didn't know, is the cat used to belong to Liam Neeson, and this cat has a special set of skills, and he will find him. He will find him.
And he will kill them.
Yeah, I do love the kind of gradual build-up as, I should call him by his real name, David Johansen, and, you know, Buster Poindexter is his nom de plume, but... Yeah, like, when he first tries to kill the cat, and there's that comedy of errors of, like, I just can't fucking kill this cat for some reason, up to the point where it's like, oh, this thing is a demon, and I should just escape. But, yeah, it's fucking great. One of my favorite anthology stories in general, not just in this mm-hmm. movie.
But really what gets me is just completely criminal, and it has nothing to do with it, is my memory. I don't remember this segment from when I was a kid watching this movie. This is the only segment I don't remember, and I kind of want to go back to when I was a little kid and just slap myself around a little bit and be like, no, I know it's about a fucking cat. You watch it, you little stupid shit. Watch this.
What if you kind of mementoed yourself so that when you were a kid, you intentionally erased that memory so that as an adult, when you saw it again, it would be like watching it for the first time and you could have that moment of delight.
Nice.
Yes.
I'm going to have to start tattooing shit that I watch on myself.
Yeah, right. Cat from hell. Now where was I?
And finally, we are going to be talking about the final segment, which is Lover's Vow. Now, this one, I watched this film many times when I was younger. And when I watched it, I watched it from an old burnt VHS tape that my father had it taped. And in the beginning of this film, it like missed the beginning segments with Deborah Harry and everything else. So I had no idea what this film was. And I just watched it. And I would watch it frequently. And what stuck out to me, and which I remembered, which it took until I was a fucking adult to find out what film this was this segment. This segment, through growing up and everything else, like I always said, there's this awesome fucking movie that has this guy that sees a gargoyle killing someone. And it keeps him alive if he keeps the promise and never tells. And then falls in love with this chick who happens to be the gargoyle. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me for years and remembering. So for me, this is my favorite segment. This is the one because it for some reason, I don't know why, in my younger age and even to now, maybe it's, you know, I've got a wife and I've got kids and everything else, but this one fucking hits me every time I watch it.
Well, I'm going to refrain from saying too much bad things about it.
Yeah, let me shit on his memories, Duncan.
I'm a big boy, man. I'm not a little kid anymore. I can take it. Go.
I think this is the weakest segment. I think it's dull. I think the gargoyles look pretty stupid. I don't think any of the performances in this segment are very good. I'm in fairness, I'm sort of not ever impressed by James Remar.
Oh, I want to slap you, Boran, still right in the face.
I know, everyone does. but yeah, I just, I feel like this, if it weren't for Debbie Harry showing up at the ass end of this movie, I just felt completely disengaged when I watched this particular segment. It just doesn't do it for me. You know, it, just like anything, there are certain short stories that hit you just right, and this is one of those that misses me entirely.
Dude, it's life experiences. I said it before, you're not married, you don't have kids. But imagine if you were married to somebody, okay? You saw this freaky shit, and you kept your promise to not mention this freaky shit. And then you finally tell this person that you're live, okay, that you live with and have had children with and everything else about this. And then she starts screaming that you broke your promise and then tears out of this fucking body. And it is the gargoyle and eats you, and your kids are now gargoyles and all sad, and they fly fucking away and turn to stone on top of a building. There is something so goddamn depressing about that if you put yourself in the shoes of it. And I can't help but put myself in the shoes of it. You know what I mean? It's just, and even as a kid, I always did, because, you know, there was my parents and, you know, I was the kids. So I'm like, what if this happens in my life? And then suddenly I was a gargoyle stuck on a fucking thing because my dad didn't keep his promise. You know what I mean? It hits me then. It hits me now for different reasons. It's just, you know, role reversal.
Well, Duncan, why don't you shit on it a little bit and then I'll come in and bring it back a little.
I kind of agree with everything Bo said. I wouldn't use the terminology that Bo said because he's a heartless bastard. I think this one to me does feel a bit boring. Which once again, if you look at how anthologies should be paced, you need to start strong, you need to finish strong. And I just kind of, even removing the wraparound, this one just feels very lackluster. I don't particularly like the design of the gargoyles either. I don't think, especially coming back to it, I really think this segment is the one that suffered worst in terms of how it actually looks now. I actually quite like James Remar in this, but I quite like James Remar unlike Bo. And yeah, I like the premise of the story, and the story is based on like a Japanese folklore, and I have in the past read quite a lot of like Yashimon and stuff like that. I you know, I've read a lot of kind of the Japanese works, poems and stuff like that, so I really like the way they tell stories. I think there is something incredibly romantic about Japanese literature in general. I just don't think it necessarily translates all that well in this segment. It just kind of falls a bit flat for me at the, you know, come. I mean, the biggest crime is that this one follows the Cat from Hell, which is, you know, is the perfect creep show short. And this one just feels out of place, I think. I would love to have seen this one as actually, you could really develop this one into a feature. I think you could put a lot more depth into it and really, really kind of play up that. I don't feel that I spend enough time with the characters to feel overly invested with them. So when the outcome happens at the end, it doesn't have the same impact that it did on Ryan, which is always a danger as well with shorts and anthologies, is that it can be very difficult to make that connection with characters because you don't have a lot of time to do it. And that's probably my biggest gripe with this one, is that I don't connect to it. I don't find it as interesting or stimulating as the previous one. And I think almost watching it alone, maybe I'd feel a bit more positive about it. But because it follows such a strong short, it just doesn't quite work for me.
Mm. Look, Duncan, I've read my fair share of hentai too, and I don't see the influences here.
That tentacle porn, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I know that's what you're talking about, right? But anyway. Yes, I'm talking
about. Right, Japanese literature. Normal mainstream Japanese literature. I know.
Right. Squids on women's faces and taking shits on their face. You know, stuff like that. Japanese literature.
Yeah, I can definitely see the influences here. But for myself, I think the effects are actually pretty decent. I mean, the design could be better. I do think the effects work here is pretty decent. I think the acting is all right overall. But the thing that really gets me about this one is the story and the moral. And that's what I really like about this one, is the morals. Mm-hmm. Some promises are meant to be kept. And I really like that one a lot. I do think it drags just a little bit, But the ending of this, the ending hits, and I like that so much because it is fucking sad and depressing. So
yeah, you're right. That's the whole thing with it. Okay, it's with this film. Yeah, you're saying that, you know, some promises are meant to be kept, okay? The fact that the only reason he tells this promise is because this woman has brought so much into his life, has helped him so much. In the beginning of this story, he is a starving artist, basically, and, you know, gets fired from his agent. And by the end of it, she helps him get, you know, into a recognized gallery, and he becomes successful, and they have kids together. Everything that she has brought into his existence has been perfect, and it's haunted him for years that the one thing he has not been able to give her is complete honesty. And that's the reason why he's telling it. And the fact that him doing this because he loves this character so much, and that's what makes it him break this promise, and the ultimate fuck you is she is who he promised, and then she eats him. It's fucked. It's a fucked scenario. And it's like I said, okay, we've got the original story with the mummy. Okay, I don't find that terribly frightening or anything else, so it has almost a silly tone to it. You get the cat from hell, which is fucking madness. All right, it's just crazy. And this one, the best I could is put it is it's haunting. That's how it ends. So it's three different emotions played in these three different stories to create this whole.
You make a strong case for it. I wish the segment itself made as good a case for it as you made.
Right. But I'll just say again, you know, get married, have some kids, watch it again in 10 years. And you'll be like, that's fucking sad.
They'll fucking turn into gargoyles on me. I don't want to be that guy.
Just keep your promise. Whatever promise you make anybody, just keep it. And then you'll never get eaten in front of your children, who are now gargoyles.
But I like butt sex.
Well, I don't care if you like it up the ass, son. That has nothing to do with gargoyles.
No, I like maybe it up her ass, but, you know, whatever.
All right. All right. And then, of course, the wraparound. The wraparound is, why don't you tell us the wraparound there, Bo?
Yeah, so it's basically the witch deal. Right. I mean, she finally is like, look, enough fucking around with all the stories. It's time for me to eat you, and not in the fun way, even though I'm Debbie Harry. And that would be awesome because you would be part of rock history. That's how I see it anyway. And then he, you know, kind of gives her the old dipsy doodle, and which I think is how it's written in the script. Kid gives her the dipsy doodle.
Right, exact words, yes.
And it's fine. You know, like, the wraparound in this one, I kind of feel like it's a nice placeholder. It's a good justification for the movie to happen and to string together these stories. I don't think it's terribly inventive or anything, but like I said, it's fun to see Debbie Harry being, you know, kind of an old crone in this scenario and stuff. So it works for me. Like, it's a serviceable wraparound, but it's not in any way exceptional, other than Debbie Harry.
Fully agree with that one. So let's do the rating. As far as Gray Shift Radios, anybody that's listening to this, we do school grades. So we'll start with Duncan. Duncan, what would you give Tales from the Dark Side, the movie?
It gets a C+ from myself.
Right. Ouch. Right on. Bo, how about yourself?
I actually will rate this a little bit higher. It's a B- for me. I think Lot 249 is fun. I probably enjoyed that more than Duncan did, and Cat from Hell is so good. I mean, that's the, you know, pocket of air that's dragging the rest of this movie up to a B. it's totally worth it. If you've never seen it, you should watch it. It's a good anthology.
John, how about yourself?
Wow, what the fuck, guys? I do enjoy the Mummy story. As I said, I think it's one of the best Mummy stories. Plus, I love the fucking cast. Cat from Hell is just crazy and fun. And then, you know, like I said, the Gargoyle story hits home. It's kind of sad. So they all kind of hit for me. This is definitely a B+. I really like this movie.
Right on. As far as myself, I'm going with John on this one. This is a B+ movie. It's no Creepshow or Creepshow 2. Some people argue that maybe it's better than Creepshow 2, which, you know, you'll hear
maybe.
that we will hear on the reviews that will be coming. But, you know, there's something about this one. Like I said, the Mummy one isn't my favorite, but it's not bad. It's still enjoyable, and I find myself smiling at it. Cat from Hell is so fucking badass that I can watch that segment over and over again. And like I said, the Gargoyle segment, it just hits me, dude. It hits me hard. It's a segment that after it's over, I think about it. For a while, I think about what they're trying to say. So for me, it's a B+. This is a good fucking movie. I dig it. So if anybody hasn't seen Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, or hasn't seen it since 1990, pop it back on because it's a really good fucking anthology. So there it is. Once again, we are Graveshift Radio, and you know, be prepared for Creepshow 1 and 2 because that's on its way. Say goodbye, people.
Goodbye, people.
Later.
This has been a Legion podcast. Ooh, quickie.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da, the trailer's playing. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da.
Oh, yeah. I say you don't put the trailer in there. You just keep that bit.
Right.
This is the trailer. The trailer for the movie Tales from the Dark Side. There you go.